I don't know if this will work or not, but I'm standing on the shores of the Lake Inuashiro in the Fukushima Prefecture, in what's probably a, I don't know, there's all of these force something or other gales, but I don't know how they measure that, so I can't really guess. But the snow's coming at me in at like almost horizontally. I'm standing here waiting for the sun to rise. It's pretty cold, but it's you know, it's not unbearable. So I'm standing here with my head facing away from the wind at the moment, so I can try to record this. I'm sure you can hear the waves beating onto the shore. There's some ducks that keep flying around now. It's we're just into civil twilight. I'm not looking at my watch right now, but I think it's about 6:30 a.m. The sun rises at 5 to 7 at this time of year. But I've just got down here. I'm a little bit early. You know, the thick cloud coverage has meant that, you know, basically, the sun's got no chance of lighting anything up at the moment. Obviously, it's not even on the horizon yet, but the effects of the sun are not really here yet. It's a very sort of blue, cold world at the moment. But I thought, you know, I've probably got 5 or 10 minutes to sit here and wait. So I figured that I'd try and record a little bit of audio for you guys. So I'm hoping, here's my plan. So let's see how this pans out. I'm hoping that shortly, you know, there's a beautiful snow coverage. It's been snowing all night. It was relatively warm yesterday, I think 2 degrees most of the time, so that's 2 degrees Celsius, and I haven't got a clue of what that is in Fahrenheit, so we'll figure that out later. But I was driving in the area yesterday. The roads were a little bit slippy, but it was above freezing point. But then last night it started snowing, so luckily this morning it's totally whited out. I woke up at 5:50 to come around and see if to see if this was worth coming out. And I was thinking at the time that if it's a real blizzard, then I'm probably going to stay in bed and come out for an hour after it's light. There was no snow falling when I looked out of the window an hour ago, 50 minutes ago. So I got ready and came down, and I walked out of the hotel doors, and it's really sort of blowing a gale, it's just incredibly cold. Actually, I'm going to just turn around a moment just to make sure there's no bears walking along at me. I'm clear. Face full of snow, I turn back around so that my hood's facing the other way. What I'm hoping is that I can get some nice winter scenes. I've shot here a few times. I think the image Swan's Awake that's on my website, that's from here. But you know, I like to return to the same spots to try to improve on what I've got. And you never really work a location fully until you've visited it a few times. Sometimes you get lucky and get great shots first off, and I think that was one. But you know, try to improve on that. Hang on a moment. I'm holding my iPhone, recording this with one of my gloves off, and my hand's freezing, so I'll try and put my glove back on while I talk, and not do a very good job about it because I'm a bloke, and blokes don't do two things at once very well. So other glove back on. My gear hanging off my shoulder. I've got the 600mm on my right shoulder, the 300mm f/2.8 hanging over the left shoulder with the 1DS Mark III stuck on it. They're taking a lot of full snow, so I should probably just wrap something around them in a moment once I've finished this. Probably should have done that before I started recording this. So I don't know. You know, I can't think of anything else that I want to say. You know, the swans are roosting way over in the distance, and you know, I'm hoping to capture some of those that, you know, when they start to get up and spread their wings and fly over. It's one of those touristy spots, a pretty remote touristy spot, But it, you know, what happens is they sell bird feed in the shop near the hotel, and so the tourists drive along, grab a $2 bag of bird seed, and then come out to feed the ducks and the swans cotton onto that. So you know the swans will fly over in this direction, but to be honest, I think with the weather as it is, the swans can, you know, the small birds can fly. The swans will have a little bit more difficulty, and so I don't know what's going to happen. It's actually got a lot brighter in the few minutes that I've been just spun around there again. in the few minutes that I've been standing here, it's actually got a lot brighter. I can see that a lot more sort of detail. The blue's turning to white now. But yeah, the swans come over here and you know, try to get some feed. So I'm hoping to get some pictures of the swans flying over this way as well. And if, you know, if they're flying through a snowstorm, it'll make for some nice you know, dramatic shots, hopefully, if I can actually do it. The problem here is that if I turn my lens towards where the swans come from, I get a front element full of snow, and so you've literally got two or three shots before you have to excuse me, before you have to turn back around and get rid of the you know, get the snow off the front element, and so that, you know, that it slows you down. I've never figured out a way of stopping that happen. One thing that I do, of course, is, you know, these big long lenses have very deep hoods. Excuse me. And so I generally turn them away from the snow, you know, from the snow that's driving forward, you know, driving at me at a good angle. And so, you know, I think that's maybe one tip. Obvious, pretty obvious. But you know, keep the camera facing away from the snow while you're waiting, and then just spin it around on the tripod when you're ready to shoot. But you've really got just a few moments, and that's about it. You know what? Now I'm starting to see some detail in these trees behind me. I think I'm gonna try a couple of shots. Actually, I'd need to change lenses, and I don't think that's possible right now. Maybe I'll maybe try some shots. Maybe stitch them together later, but there's some nice wintry scenes behind me as well. So I'll wrap it up for now, and I'll see if this is worth using. I don't know if the wind sound will be too much, or the waves. And also, this is the first time I've tried recording on my iPhone as well, so I don't know if that'll work. But I'll wrap it up for now, and I'll see if we can use this in a podcast. See you later. Bye bye.
Welcome to episode 172 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. As you just heard, I was over at the Inawashiro Lake on the last day of 2008, hoping to capture one or two more good images before I said goodbye to the year. I believe that I did, as we saw two of the shots from this day in my best 10 shots of 2008 in episode 170, and that was a few weeks ago. Today we start a two-part series in which I'm going to talk a little bit about the trip as we look at a few images from the last day of the trip. I was on the road for 3 days and basically having a wander around the area, but the last day was the one where I really got the shots that I was after, mainly due to the snow. And so we'll take a look at those and sort of mix in a few tips as we go along, and in the usual fashion. So just to recap, we were played in there by me standing on the shore of the lake in Inawashiro in the Fukushima prefecture in northern Japan. The wind was high, as you could probably tell, and the snow was driving at me almost horizontally. It was pretty much impossible to stand looking into the snow and record. So I, you know, basically, as I tried to say there, I was, I'd turned my back to the snow, and I'd got a big hood on my down jacket. So that was really protecting me from the wind to a degree. But what I'd done is, because I thought I've never really tried this before, and you know, as I said, with the iPhone, it was the first time I'd recorded with it, and because of the high winds in that, I was trying to get the mic very close to my face, and so there was a little bit of distortion there. But you know, hopefully you won't mind too much. I'll definitely bear it in mind that I can move the phone away from my mouth a little bit more if I do that again, though. So it was 6:30 a.m. When I started that intro, and it was still relatively dark, but getting gradually lighter as I spoke. And I was into civil twilight, as I'd confirmed using VeloClock, a tool that I use on my iPhone, basically to find out where the various twilights start. You know, we have astronomical, nautical, and civil twilight. And photographers, you know, generally, if you're not, unless you're shooting the stars, of course, are going to be most interested really in sort of the civil twilight, because that's when it starts to get light enough to tell that it's getting light, really. And also the light in that time is pretty beautiful. So I like to know when that is. I'm sure, I've never really looked into this. I'm sure it depends totally on where you are on the Earth. You know, how far north or south you are, and away or away from the equator. But you know, basically, in Japan, we have about 30 minutes or so of civil twilight. And that means basically, you know, got a nice bit of light, and it gives you time to sort of ease into the shooting, especially on dark days, you know, overcast days like this. But I did want to just mention VeloClock, because there's been some changes in the recent version that they've released that really just caps it off for me perfectly. I'm going to try not to go into too much detail, although I am excited about the application, because I am thinking of doing like my top three iPhone apps for photographers at some point. But you know, just because it's really sort of all come together now, I wanted to mention it. So basically, what's happened is now we have the ability now to select a different day in the past or the future. You know, until now it's been like today. It showed you the data for the moon, the phases of the moon, when the sun or the moon rise and set, all of that. One of the first things that I wanted, I actually was working with the people over at Vela Design, I think they're called, and they told me that they were going to add the ability to sort of tell the azimuth, you know, where on the horizon the sun or the moon is going to rise and set. That came out a month or so, maybe a couple of months back. And I'd also heard somewhere, I forget whether it was from them or from somewhere on the net, that they were working on the ability to be able to select the day. And if I had that, it was going to be perfect. That was everything I needed. And in the latest version, as I say, that was released last week, it's there. It's like you can now go in and select any day. And so for me, at that point, it's the photographer's app. If you're photographing in the great outdoors, then it's a must-have application for an iPhone. And it also now has the ability to use the iPhone GPS to give you information on that exact location on the Earth. So, you know, and you can also use, there's like a home location, and you can either set that to the GPS coordinates that you have at the time, or I believe you can type them in as well. So you could use this for trip planning if you knew the locations, but don't if the name of the place is not actually in the list. excuse me. But then when you're on the road, it's just ideal because it knows exactly where you are, and you can sort of in the hotel on the night before, you can tell exactly when you get into civil twilight, set your alarm clock accordingly, and just get out there and do it. So I just wanted to give that a quick plug while we're getting started here, because I was using VeloClock at this time, and now that all of that extra stuff's on there, it's the app for photographers. I'll put a link to the VeloClock site in the show notes, but you can just search for VeloClock, that's V-E-L-A clock, in iTunes, in the App Store, and you'll find it there. I think at the moment it's $3.95. It's 450 yen in Japan, but I think it's $3.95 or $3.99, and it's worth every penny. So you know, go out and get that. Anyway, the sun was going to rise at about 6:55 if it was, you know, that would, well, at least would have hit the horizon if I could have seen the sky. But there was just heavy snow and, of course, heavy snow clouds that were just cutting out all of the light. And obviously, I think the sun would have actually have risen behind me. I could have told that with Velocloc, of course, but it was not really what I was there for. I wasn't there to shoot a sunrise, but just very interested in when the sun's getting up because the light quality changes. And but there was, you know, there's no point in standing here sort of waiting for the swans to fly because, like I said in the intro, you know, they tend to swim from their roost to the front of this hotel and things on the beach of the lake where I was standing. When it's really bad weather, they do fly when it gets a little bit warmer. You know, once the sun started to affect the temperature a little bit, but at dawn, I've found that in when it's really driving snow, like it was, they hang around in their roost a little bit longer as well. So I was just sort of hanging out, basically seeing what I could do, recording podcast, you know, little clippets for the podcast, but. Clip it. Is that a clip and a snippet? I think I've just invented a word. So anyway, basically what I'd started to do, I'd said in the end of the, or at some point in the intro there, that I was going to start to experiment with the lens that I'd got and, you know, that I'd got on the camera. And that was the 300mm f2.8L lens. And we can see an example of some of the stuff that I started to capture in image number 2039. You can tell how low the light was still because, you know, I shot this with an aperture of f5.6 and still I had to select a shutter speed of 1/30th of a second with an ISO of 800. In this wind, I was relying heavily on the tripod, you know, to keep things stable and the image stabilization as well to a degree. And, you know, because it was just really gusting across and I was shooting sort of at an angle. You know, it was coming side on to me at this at this angle, so it was really sort of you know, a lot of stabilization needed there. Most of the shots though were sharp and as shot mostly in the moments. What I was doing was, you know, waiting for those moments when the wind died down slightly, and you know, there's no point getting, you know, usually gusts in sort of bursts, so trying to sort of get the slightly less gusty moments to actually take the shots. It's not as though it's an action shot, so I can choose my moment. And but, you know, basically the trusty tripod did a good job of keeping everything stable. And I have, of course, included a man-made object in this image with the jetty there that will be used in the summer to board people into their little Perspex swan-shaped paddling boats you know, people, Perspex, they don't make those of Perspex. Forget that. What am I thinking of? Fiberglass, that's the word. So, you know, but right now, this thing was really just, the only purpose it was serving was to add a point of reference in my photo, showing how the snow was sort of really driving almost horizontally across the screen, the scene that will be, and how really cold this place was. It was really bitterly cold and, you know, nowhere near as cold as it is in Hokkaido in the dawn shoots, but with the temperature being slightly below freezing point without the wind, I'm sure that, you know, there's when you're calculating the wind chill, it must have been probably around minus 10 or 15 degrees. I don't know how fast the wind was, so, you know, how many miles per hour or so, or kilometers an hour the wind was, so I can't really calculate the wind chill, but it was cold, you know, it did feel pretty cold. I think I've mentioned before, you know, in other podcasts, but I also mentioned in this little intro that, you know, apart from the obvious things of keeping your hands cold and keeping yourself safe, obviously that's clothing and gloves and stuff like that, but, you know, the wind does really just smack straight into your front element as soon as you point your lens directly at it. In the next image, which is image number 2045, I was still sort of pretty much, you know, shooting with the wind coming at me from the side. So it wasn't a big issue at this point still. But just looking across, you know, what I was doing here was looking across the scene and just sort of finding things to crop out, you know, with the 300mm lens. And this was shot at 7:22, almost half an hour after the last shot. The sun was now above the horizon, though, but, you know, just not lighting the scene directly. And probably, as I say, behind the mountains, behind me anyway, for maybe a few more minutes yet. But the sky was kind of becoming that big light box, but it just wasn't very light. And what I'd done, though, you know, because of the additional light that I was getting, I'd now reduced the ISO to 200, and I was shooting with a shutter speed of 1/50th of a second at f5. So, you know, there is more light available now, we can tell from the settings, but it was still relatively bleak. This is one of my favourites from this series of shots that I just cropped out portions of the scene for. And, you know, I've uploaded a few more images, and I will include a link in the show notes that lists. There's 30 shots that I uploaded from this day. That's a lot for one day. So, you know, and that was after a lot of soul searching to get rid of many of the ones that weren't quite up to it. But basically, I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to take a look at all of those. And that includes there's seven or so that we'll look at next week as well. I like the look of the dark trees with the driving snow here, and that sort of slightly soft background caused by the relatively shallow depth of field. And the fact that there's more snow back there really sort of helps. I'm talking about the driving snow, because that's adding a little bit of softness to the image as we get further back into the shot. One thing to note here is that to bring out these blacks, and they're not black, but, you know, to bring out these dark trees from the snowstorm, I had to grab the black slider there in Lightroom and move that to about 20. The default is 5, I believe. And I increased the contrast and the clarity some as well to bring out the definition and the shape of the trees a little bit more. It was a much paler sort of low contrast shot because of the weather than we see here. Getting back to the snow on the front element, though, really sidetracking myself a lot today. As the light levels rose, I really wanted to start to shoot the area of the scene in which the swans were roosting. And so I was going to have to start pointing my lens straight into the snow. And I find that, you know, the only way to shoot in these conditions, as I mentioned in the intro, was to just shoot quickly and then wipe the lens. You've got a few shots. I think, you know, you can get away with a few droplets for a while unless they sort of place themselves over something critical. But if you, basically shoot, you know, point yourself towards the snow, it'll start to come on there. You can't always see it. You know, it's got to get pretty bad before you can see it. But then you've just got to turn stop shooting, get your lens turned, flip it back around to face yourself, and just get a lens cloth out and wipe the front element off. If it's, you know, if we're just talking rain or a little bit of snow that melts quickly, then you can sometimes just blow it off with a blower. But, with weather like this, where it's really driving at you, you just have to give it a good wipe. That's just it. Make sure that's a tip. just make sure that if you are shooting into the snow, it's there and it will affect the quality of the image to a degree. So just be conscious that you have to keep flipping that lens back around to face you and wipe it off pretty regularly. I always keep a lens cloth with me at all times. But on this day, what I'd done is I'd actually, as I was leaving the room, I'd put my little pouch. I have a low pro pouch that I hook over my belt. I'd put that on top of my camera bag because I was going to leave the camera bag in the hotel room and just take what I thought I needed. And I forgot to put it on the belt. So I was really, really happy that I'd got once I was out there and set up, there was no way I was going to go back in. And so I was just really happy that I'd got one of those Spuds lens cleaners just hanging off the zipper of my photographer's vest. And so I could just sort of, you know, pull that out, give it a bit of a wipe, and then just stuff it back into the little bag that comes with the Spuds. I'm doing a lot of product plugging today. Spuds, they're great. They're also edible if you come from the UK. So I was just basically using those my Spuds lens cleaner to wipe off the front of the lens, because the rest of the stuff foolishly was in the hotel. The other problem, of course, with being outside, and I mentioned this as well in the intro, that it's really not easy to change lenses without at least risking getting some snow in the camera, and that of course means water once it's in there, and that's not a good thing. It probably would be worth taking the risk if you really had to, and you just have to be very careful. Turn yourself around and use yourself as a shield to stop the snow driving straight at you while you're doing it. But it's, I think the thing was with me on this day is that I was hoping that the swans would fly across. The 600mm can actually be too much telephoto, really, to use to shoot a number of swans that are flying. It's great for picking one or two out on the wing, but as they get relatively close, the 300 is pretty much the lens for that sort of stuff. And so I didn't really want to risk switching lenses, putting the 600 on for this would have been pretty futile. But even I'd got the 70 to 200 in my pocket, but I didn't really want to risk changing it out because I didn't want to miss some swans if they did fly over. So what I decided to do, and this is something that we've touched on before as well, and I did say this in the intro a little bit as well, but let's just get up the next image and we'll talk about it in that context. The image is 2047. I basically just sort of flipped the camera up, loosened the ring that holds it to the tripod, turned it up vertically into portrait mode, and shot a series of images moving across the scene at about, shifting about half a frame at a time, and then stitched them together in Photoshop. This was actually 16 vertical images stitched together, with lots of overlap there, of course. And the resulting image is 16,248 pixels long by, wide, I guess, by 3,658 pixels high. It's difficult to appreciate, obviously, if you're looking at it on an iPhone and even in the web version. It's a pretty sort of long letterbox type image. But it's one cool image to look at in Photoshop CS4. And the reason being that CS4 now uses the computer's GPU or the graphics processing unit to render images on the screen. And that means that you can grab the image and basically just sort of throw it around. Whatever tool you have, if you hit the space bar to get the little hand, or if you have the hand tool selected, just grab the image and move it around like here. If you sort of zoom in so that you've got the image, the height of the image filling the screen, and then move with the hand tool, you can just throw it across, and it actually now with using the GPU in CS4, it will scroll the image and keep it intact, not like before where it would move the image with like a little frame or something, and then it would be re-rendered after the image is let go. Now you can basically just throw it around there, and it just pans across the screen. Once you've let go, it's got a bit of momentum. So it just sort of scrolls across the screen horizontally, and you can just flick across it and look into all of the wonderful detail in the image. And, there's lots of swans in there just sort of waiting to be looked at. And, I just love playing around with this in CS4. I haven't actually printed this out yet, even on 13x19. But I'm hoping that before too long I'll be able to print this out on roll paper, and really look at the big long panoramic print at sort of maybe 5 or 6 feet wide, something like that. That will be something else. It's not a great shot. It's like there's a lot of detail in there, but as far as the image goes, I like the effect that the snow has. You can see that it's a really bleak winter morning. There's lots to look at in there, but overall, it's not a world beater by any means. But I'm just excited by the detail in there that we can see, and I would like to see it sort of pretty big. And so, that's one thing that I'd like to try and do at some point. The The huge Epson printer has been pretty much on the back burner for a while now because I'm just not moving. I needed to move apartments to actually, you know, to get room to buy that and, you know, start making larger prints available. But I for now I'm staying put. I'm not able to move just yet, so that's got kind of on the back burner as well. So, you know, the biggest fun that I've had at looking at this one has been flicking it around the screen in CS4 using the GPU to render it real time. Anyway, so this last shot that we just looked at was that was made at 7:30 a.m. and that was shortly before I finished the dawn shoot. I was out there for about an hour, just over an hour, and then I went back in for breakfast. But before I went back in, I recorded a few more minutes of audio, and so what I'm going to do now is just play that again, and you know, we'll pick up the shoot after breakfast in the next episode. But for now, I'm going to play you out with that, and I think that it's probably going to feel a little bit weird to play that and then do some housekeeping. So not a lot left. I've rambled a lot today as well. So let's forget the housekeeping section for this week. Don't tune out yet, though. Just hang around and listen to the last bit of the recording. And, really the only thing to say, if we're not going to do a housekeeping, is you have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.
Wow. This was great. I don't know. I'm looking at my watch. I imagine about an hour's passed since I last spoke. I've been standing, walking along, this lake, Inawashiro Lake, the snow didn't let up, but I think that's added to the photos, and I like sort of shooting in these conditions. I'm all hyped up. I'm a little bit high at the moment, and still my right hand with no glove on at the moment holding the iPhone is pretty cold, but it's not been that bad. I'm wrapped up, prepared for this. My 1DS, the dial on top of the one that you change the aperture with, frozen up a few times. I sort of go, as I was trying to get from 100 to 125th of a second, it wouldn't go because of snow and ice on the dial, I think. But if I rotated it the other way a little bit and did a full circle, then it worked again. Apart from that, gears no problems. The swans aren't flying as I expected. They swam along. There was a few came along this way. Been really just concentrating on trying to capture the harshness of the conditions in which these ducks are sleeping. And then I've been doing some panoramas. I've got the 70 to 200 millimeter in my pocket, but the snow's coming at me that hard that I can't really change out the lenses. I've been doing some panoramas with the 300mm and just sort of hoping to stitch them together later. Beautiful winter scene in the distance, but we'll have to see how it works out. The snow may be so harsh that it makes the pictures look a little bit soft, but I'm hoping that it doesn't. I'm hoping that it actually works and you can see the snow sort of flying across the images. See how it works out, if I can stitch them together. If not, I'll probably try and just salvage a few. There are a few of them that I've shot in the middle here that will probably be good as images on their own. But I think we might have a few powerful panoramas here as well. So I'm going to take a few more of those panoramas, and then I'm going to head back and try and get rid of, try and get the snow off my gear, put it in the trunk of the car, because I can't take it in the room or it'll all get... what's the word? Humidity, not humidity. Yeah, I can't even remember the word. Condensation. That's it. If I took the gear into the room now, it'd get condensation on it, so it'll sit in the trunk of the car until I've had breakfast and then head off out. But great hour. I hope I've got some good photos to show you from this as well. Catch you later. Bye bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.